Close to home, someone wins a huge Powerball drawing in South Fargo. Who won the money and how much? Not far from here, the mayor of St. Paul says he's all about a gun ban in public places. And half a country away, RFK Jr. defends his concern about vaccines before Congress, while a North Dakota senator says he's coming around on good old-fashioned North Dakota agriculture. That's right, RFK in the news quite a bit today. Good afternoon, my friend. Good to be with you here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Coming to you live today from Grand Rapids, Minnesota. I'm up here in, Governor Walz would say, hanging out with the rocks and the cows, but really, really good people. And today I'm hanging out with the rain. It's raining fairly hard here right now. I understand we've had a little bit of that at home as well. And after a very rainy summer, it's been fairly dry here over the last, I don't know, 3-4 weeks or so. So maybe a shot of rain isn't such a bad thing. The problem is I don't think the mosquitoes are done with us quite yet, so we might have a little bit of that left to go. It is September 24th, 2025, and the Minnesota State High School Girls Softball Championship was still won by a guy, and we'd like to remind everybody of that here on the program. Maybe someday we won't have to say such things are true in our world anymore. So we will continue the daily reminders until things change. On the program today, we have much to do. It's our daily opportunity to come together, meeting of the minds, mine and yours, as we sort through this crazy world and apply the events of the news cycle to the conservative playbook and sometimes the good book, as well as we attempt to make sense of this wild world and wild country that we live in today. I've got some numbers here that made me go, no kidding. Transgender numbers among American 20-year-olds have skyrocketed. Just how big has the leap been? We'll talk about that today. Julie Fedorchuk will check in from Washington, D.C. The congresswoman from North Dakota will join us today at 4:40. And with the funding of the federal government now on the front burner, what's going to guide her in deciding what to spend money on and what to say no to? She hasn't had a whole lot of these decisions to make quite yet. She did get involved, obviously, with the reconciliation bill, got behind that, but this is a little different. There may be a lot more opportunity for independent thought, if you will, on this particular one. So we've got that going on today here on the program. Minnesota is losing daycare providers, and the state of Minnesota not the only ones. Why are daycare providers closing left and right? Certainly we're seeing a lot of it right now in the state of Minnesota, so we'll dig into that. It's back to school season, but not necessarily back to your own school season in the state of Minnesota. Enrollment there in the open enrollment programs, a little higher rates than you might think. So we'll talk about that. Also today on the program, some folks want to eliminate a chunk of the world's population. They say that will make the earth more sustainable, and we won't have the global warming. As I look outside my window here, and it's like 52 degrees on September 4th in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. So does this really accomplish anything in regard to having a happy and healthy planet? We're going to talk to a senior fellow at the Cato Institute today. His name is Marion Tupi, and he's written a bunch on this. And very interesting to hear his positions on this. And he challenges a lot of common beliefs that population growth is a bad thing as far as the world's resources. So I thought that would be interesting to talk about today because we hear a lot about that, right? We got to control the population. So we'll talk about that. And before we finish up, the NFL season kicks off tonight. And the most valuable team in the NFL is playing this evening. Wait until you hear how much money the Dallas Cowboys make every year. I guess those high-paid quarterbacks aren't too much of a problem when you make the kind of money that they make. So a lot of things to cover here on the program today. You know me. I got to sneak a little sports in there, especially on kickoff night in the NFL. I got to wait till Monday for my Vikes to play. So we'll get a little bit of an appetizer starting tonight. 701-271-1100 is our phone number, and you can give us a call on that number if you would like to add something to the conversation, ask a question, suggest a topic. Hope that you'll feel comfortable to do that. This is your welcome mat to giving us a call on the program today. Studio at flagfamily.com is our email address, and 701-237-1590 is our text line today. I can't promise I'll get to many texts today with the variety of things that we've got crammed in here in these next couple of hours, but we'll do our very best. And that phone line I gave to you a minute ago is the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They have recently expanded. They can get you in very quickly. So if you need occupational therapy, physical therapy, nurse practitioner, mental health counseling, they can do it all for you. Go to valleychristian.co and find out more about what they can do for you there. All right, let's get to it with a 4 o'clock wrap. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire. To close out a very busy and eventful Thursday, we start with the almanac for today, September 4th. Average high for today is 77. Nowhere near that today. Average low 52. Record high 98 in 1979 and record low 32 degrees in 1885. Sunrise this morning was at 6:51. Sunset will be at 8 o'clock tonight. And then tomorrow will be a 7:58 sunset. And we will have the sun setting before 8 o'clock for quite some time before we move it the other way. Ugh. In the markets today, it was a pretty good day on Wall Street. And this is a good sign if you are hoping that stocks and mutual funds and exchanges and things like that go up, because there wasn't much news today. It was just a day where people felt like buying. So some optimism without a whole lot of news, generally a bullish signal on the stock market. The Dow was up $350 to finish at 45,621. The S&P 500 at a fresh record high as well, up $53.82 at 6,502. NASDAQ up 209 to finish at 21,707. WTI crude oil today pretty much unchanged, 63.30 a barrel. Gold today down $33 an ounce at 3,602. Silver down 74 cents to close at $41.31. And Bitcoin today down $1,500 to close at 110,455. I actually have to change my pattern of thinking, because Bitcoin markets never really close. It's not traded on an exchange, so we don't really have closing prices. But that's where it is right now. Also, we can tell you that AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas today is $3.20 a gallon. That's up 1 cent from yesterday. Average price in North Dakota, $2.92. Minnesota, $3.11. South Dakota, $3.02. It was interesting today driving from Fargo this morning, where I saw gas at $2.59, over to Minnesota, where the first sign that I saw driving out was that gas was $3.29. So there's definitely a spread between Minnesota and North Dakota gas prices right now. In the news today, North Dakota Governor Kelly Armstrong, reports Valley News Live, is seeking another presidential major disaster declaration to help people recover from severe weather damage in North Dakota over the summer. This latest request was made in connection to a round of storms that hit August 7th and August 8th that resulted in around $6 million in damage. And this is one where we had some of those high winds topping out at 100 miles an hour in the northern end of the valley. So that disaster declaration, if granted by the federal government, would provide some federal assistance and federal program money available to help out with things with the rebuild here in North Dakota. He's had to do a couple of these this summer. It's been a wild summer on the weather side of things. WDAY Radio reports if you bought a Powerball ticket at the Don's Car Wash on 52nd Avenue in Fargo, you might be the winner of $100,000. The Fargo ticket holder matched four white balls and the Powerball, but they doubled their money because they bought the Power Play option. They now have 180 days to claim their money at the lottery office in Bismarck. Wouldn't that be nice if you were sitting there with $100,000 on that one ticket? That'd be kind of fun. Probably not enough money to like quit your job and retire and, you know, buy a beach house and just never work another day in your life. But darn, you could pay off, you know, maybe a little bit of mortgage if you got one left there, or do some investing. Wouldn't that be fun? John Hoeven says that RFK Jr., who's been a controversial figure for some in the Trump administration, is coming around to the kind of ideas that we need in agriculture in this country. He says he's met with RFK Jr. directly and says some of his initial ideas were definitely counterproductive to farming. But since then, the Health and Human Services Secretary has been more aware of what's required for the kind of ag we need in this country today. And he says, I'm going to make darn sure that they continue to work forward in a way that also works for our farmers and ranchers. Thought that was interesting. That came out of a conversation with our Scott Hennen on the What's on Your Mind program. Well, if you're hoping for things to make any sense in Minneapolis and St. Paul, I don't know that I'd hold my breath. We have the latest iteration of what people believe is the right thing to do coming out of St. Paul, where Mayor Melvin Carter said today the city is moving to pass local gun restrictions, though they will be unenforceable under current state law. So here's the story. Tim Walz is planning for a possible special session to address firearms coming up very soon after that shooting at the Annunciation Church. Carter and Jacob Frey, the Minneapolis mayor, have both called on lawmakers to enact gun control laws or lift the 1985 ban on city gun regulations. Carter says, we know when we pass this ordinance that we won't even be able to enforce it, but if the state lifts that preemption of the local restrictions, he wants St. Paul to be ready. He says, if a state preemption lifts at midnight, our city ordinance will take effect at 12:01. The local law would ban public possession of what they call assault weapons. You know how this goes. Binary triggers and guns in recreation centers and libraries. It would require every gun to have a serial number, effectively banning ghost guns. So St. Paul basically moving as far and as fast as they can toward taking away all the guns. CNBC reports today that labor market growth in the United States slowed dramatically in August, with just 54,000 jobs created nationwide, well short of the 75,000 job estimate from economists polled by Dow Jones and short of the July number, which was 106,000. There will be more numbers coming out later this week that will give us a second number. We see this happening a fair amount, that you get one job number coming in from ADP, but the other household survey shows different numbers. So we tend to not react too much to any one number. We sort of put the whole thing together. So thought that was interesting there. Also, jobless claims increased last week to 237,000. That's up 8,000 from the prior week and above estimates that were expected on Wall Street. If you put all of these notes together, my friend, with the jobless claims and the job creation being sluggish in August, it certainly will give more fuel to the fire of cutting interest rates, because now Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve have indicated that they're not just going to hold to inflation numbers as being the only reason to potentially make interest rate cuts, but they are also looking at these labor notes as well. And neither of these were particularly strong today. Also today, TheHill.com reports that unemployed workers, kind of more along the lines of employment here, outnumber available jobs, and this is the first time that's happened since 2021, and sort of the COVID bounce back there. I'll say that one again for you there because I sort of butchered it, but the number of job openings decreased by more in July than economists were expecting, and because of that now, it means this is the first time since 2021 that unemployed Americans outnumber available jobs. So remember, it used to be like there was 10 jobs for every person that wanted one. Well, that is no longer true. CNN reports that the White House is praising Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. today in a round of what they call combative testimony on Capitol Hill today. The White House put out a statement saying this is exactly why President Trump put Kennedy in charge of HHS to fix this broken system that has overseen America's unprecedented chronic disease crisis. While Democrats play theater and call for blindly throwing even more money at the problem, the Trump administration is focused on using evidence-based gold standard science to truly make America healthy again. So basically he was grilled on his stance on vaccines and health protocols and things like that. CNBC reports that Ford's redesigned Expedition SUV is seeing explosive growth. I thought this was interesting today. The Expedition is the big daddy, right? Or the big mama, however you want to look at it. That's got the three rows of seating there. Well, Ford says it sold 8,724 Expeditions in August, and that's up 53.7% from the same time last year. It's the best sales month they've had in 21 years. And so far, they've sold 61,000 of these monster vehicles, a 13.1% increase from the same period in 2024. I guess lower gas prices maybe have something to do with that. But in case you think everybody is trying to go for the compact vehicles, well, Ford sold 50% more of these biggins than they did last year in August. Thought that was interesting. Las Vegas, reports Forbes, is launching a new campaign to boost tourism after a significant summer slump. The new campaign is called Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas, and it'll focus on value for visitors and offer promotions and incentives. The city has seen visitation decline for 7 consecutive months, with the most recent report from July showing a 12% decline year over year. To this, I would say one thing. Football season has not been going in the last 7 months. Football season tends to bring people to Vegas. We'll see if that gets it done here for them. But they're trying to fight back about this and trying to figure out how to go back to some lower prices. It used to be that Vegas was a cheap getaway, but it's kind of gone through the roof in price lately. And one more for you, I have to put in. This was a story I gave you maybe 3 weeks ago, and I was kind of doing the story with a chuckle. And I don't mean to make light of like ugly buildings and dangerous facilities and places where there's been crime and things like that. But you might remember that I told you about a multifamily housing unit at 1202 First Avenue South that was basically condemned by Fargo City commissioners. And I read for you a long laundry list of all the things that had happened in the house. Like, it had been bombed. It had been gutted with fire. There were 16 drug busts in the place. The roof didn't meet code. The building foundation was cracked. I mean, it was Charlie Brown's Christmas tree when it comes to buildings. Well, somehow, some way, somebody filed an extension request to fix up the building. And city commissioner said, no. The city says the site has had 17 service calls this year alone. SWAT raid in June led to few doors being kicked in, a fire in July, the whole lower leveling. There was some flooding there, too. So it's just this building that will not die, and somebody wanted to fix it up. I want to have that guy on my show. Like, who looked at this thing and said, you know, I see some promise here in this building. I don't think Bob Vila is doing houses like that anymore. And those, friends, are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Thursday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. When we return here on the program, 20-year-olds in America are identifying as transgender in skyrocketing numbers. Just how big has the leap been? We'll tell you about that coming up next. Every once in a while, I see a chart, a graph. I'm kind of a numbers guy. I like the analytical side of things. Not the smartest guy that ever walked the face of the earth, but something about numbers. I just feel like we can learn a lot about the world around us if we have good data points. And of course, it's hard to find honest ones these days. But there are times when I see something and I say, okay, that makes sense to me. Nobody probably has a reason to fabricate numbers here. And I say, that's interesting to me. I saw one of those charts a couple of days ago, and I wanted to bring it into the show today. The CDC, Center for Disease Control, did a survey of, they do actually every 2 years, and they interview 20-year-olds about their gender identification. And the percentage of U.S. adults identifying as transgender sort of ticked along for the last, 30, 40 years, somewhere between, a 0.5% and maybe 1%, nothing all that crazy. And there wasn't much movement on that. About 10 years ago, that number finally made its way up to about 1%. So there was definitely an increase from, 15 years ago to 7-8 years ago. It jumped up to 1%. But then I guess this was about 10 years ago. It clocked in right at 1%. And the new numbers just came out, and we are now at 3.7%. Last year, the number was 2.65, so almost a full percentage point. So we had a 36% increase from last year to this year in 20-year-olds that are saying, I am transgender. That is a stunner to me. I guess I would not have been surprised if someone had said, yeah, the number went up 36%. Okay, yeah, there's seems to be a lot of glorification of this whole thing going on these days, and a whole lot of, you know, well, you probably, you know, you as a parent, you don't want your kid to kill themselves, so you better just go along with whatever it is that they're coming to you with. But I, when I saw it on a graph and I saw how basically it's been a straight line, straight up over the last 10 years, I look at this and I go, oh my gosh, if we have another 36% increase, then we're going to be like over 5 or close to 5 next year. And I just, we've got to be able to come around our kids who are struggling with who they are and find other ways to help them through these things that they're going through, rather than just say, well, if you think you're transgender, you might. When you're 20 years of age, and when I was 20, I thought I knew it all. Now that I'm 57, I realize how silly that whole thing was. And I just thought you should know those numbers. We're seeing some very alarming rates of increase on those things. And where we go from here, I don't know, but I'm not sure that that graph is going to look any friendlier anytime soon. It's 4:31 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It's time for us now to do a bottom-of-the-hour check of news and weather. We'll start in the newsroom with a look at some of the latest headlines. One of the treats of this job is to be able to take you through the magic of radio and phone lines and internet connections and all that good stuff right to D.C., where our elected officials are fighting hard for North Dakotans out there in the jungle. And we are thankful to have Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk on the program with us here today. She joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hey, Julie, how are you doing?
Hi there, Steve. I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you. Well, things are crazier and getting crazier, I guess, every day out there with a lot happening right now after the August recess. You all have been back now for a few days. You got right to it earlier this week with some legislation that you had written up to repeal some things that the Biden administration had done with our land management here in the state. So this can get into the weeds a little bit. Talk to us like we're 10 years old here. Tell us a little bit about your legislation. And it was on the floor yesterday, I know, being debated. Tell us what's happening with that.
Absolutely, Steve. Thank you. So to keep it high level, and the bottom line is, at the very last week of the Biden administration, they passed a rule that would regulate how the Bureau of Land Management, which regulates a lot of and oversees a lot of federal land in North Dakota, this rule would impact how they run that land, changing a plan that had been in place since 1988 and had been working very, very well, balanced all the state's interests in terms of natural resources, developing our resources, managing the land for the benefit of agriculture, and the environment and recreation. And they proposed a new plan. They finalized the rule for a new plan. It would have essentially cost North Dakota 12,000 jobs. It would have put 99% of the federal coal leases in our state off the books. It would have eliminated a huge percentage of the coal, oil and gas leases, federal oil and gas leases, and cost the state approximately $34 million a year in revenue. So this is a very onerous plan. We worked hard on the state level to fight this plan and to negotiate with the Biden administration and to engage with them to say, like, this doesn't work, that doesn't work, please change it. They refused. They ignored all the state's input and went ahead and passed the plan as they had proposed it. And so this plan was one of my top priorities in terms of regulatory relief for North Dakota when I took office. And so I'm excited that we've got the first step. Our congressional delegations united, Senator Hoeven and Senator Kramer and I all joined forces in bringing this Congressional Review Act bill forward. I started it in the House. Now we passed it last night and moved to the Senate. As soon as the Senate passes it, it'll go to President Trump and it'll be signed into law. And that will essentially revert back to the old plan and keep things running as they were under that plan, which was very effective.
Very much so. And kind of following up on that, there was a story that we talked about yesterday on the program that BLM actually held a lease sale yesterday north of Beulah at the Freedom Mine, 18 million tons of recoverable federal coal. So it's all coming together, Julie, huh?
It is. It is coming together, and that was a commitment that we included in the in our tax reform package, the Working Families Tax Plan, formerly referred to as the One Big Beautiful Bill. It's just a pro-growth tax plan, and in that bill was included some pro-energy policies, including the requirement for these agencies to open up lands again for leasing, and with a 90-day timeline on some of those coal leases. So it's great to see those things happening again. We have record demand for energy in our country, for power and energy as a whole. And so we have to start using our resources to meet the energy demand that our country has, to support growing industries, to support growing manufacturing, farming, and the development of the tech industry as well, to take full advantage of the growth that we can see in those industries. Yeah. They're all powered by energy, and we can yes. play a huge role in providing those energy needs in North Dakota.
Well, and what a wonderful thing that we've got an administration that understands that, and we're working every day to lower prices for energy and electricity and gasoline and all those things that we use. So it's a new day, no question about it, in Washington, D.C., and it's exactly what, like you said, working families are looking for. I also want to ask you a little bit about the process of coming back now. I think there's a couple weeks where you all are going to have to figure out how to fund the government. There's another kind of one of these mileposts coming along the way where we've got to get some consensus on how to fund the government going forward. We could talk all day about the little pieces and the little elements, but I want to just stay philosophical. What is going to guide your thinking in what to vote for and what to vote against as far as the spending decisions? What will be the principles that you're going to hold to know that, yes, I want to vote for that, or no, I don't?
Well, my philosophical principles are to vote for budgets that restrain the growth of government, ideally cut back on spending, and at the same time invest in critical areas where we need to invest. So we're investing in infrastructure, in energy development, in key safety net programs, but making them better, stronger, with less fraud, waste, and abuse, and eliminating every place we can the waste and abuse in the federal government, and pushing long term to balance our budget. So we need to restrict spending. We need to have a pro-growth policies, and we need to move towards a balanced budget. I'd like to see this work done on the regular, quote unquote, regular order, which is another Washington D.C. term, but that's where you pass each appropriations bill separately, and you can weigh what's in them and amend them as necessary and have a good debate on all that. We're doing some of that in the House. We've passed three of those appropriations bills. We've finished one yesterday. We've passed the Department of Defense, the MILCON VA, which funds a lot of military and the VA programs, and the Energy and Water Bill we passed last night. All but two of them have come out of the Appropriations Committee, so we're going to be seeing these move through the full floor votes in coming weeks. And the Senate is doing the same thing. So that's the process that I prefer and think is the most productive. And I'm sure you're going to ask me where we go from here, but I'll let you get to that.
Well, I want to get specific on one piece of that, because I heard an interview with James Lankford, senator from Oklahoma, earlier today, and he said that we don't want to shut the government down because, honestly, it sounds great at face value, but we end up creating some problems when we do that. He said, but we do have to have some urgency to actually get something done and to do it the right way. So he said there's legislation that he's been putting together in the Senate, and other people have been doing it in the House, that says we're not going to shut the government down, but we are going to require lawmakers to stay in D.C. and work on it 24/7 so that we push the issue to actually get resolution instead of just taking forever to get something done. Now, I don't know if you've seen these pieces of legislation specifically, but do you like that idea? Or if you had to pick one or the other, would you say, hey, look, we need to show that we're serious and I'm willing to shut the government down if need be? Or do you like the approach better of, hey, let's keep working at it, but still keep the government going as long as we're being forced to basically lock ourselves in a room until we get this thing done?
I definitely strongly support staying here and getting the work done and not shutting the government down. We've been through these government shutdown exercises in the past. I wasn't here during them, but they don't really produce anything of value to the American people. It doesn't save any money. And it certainly creates a lot of chaos and uncertainty for folks in the military and others across the country who work for the federal government and are served by the federal government in a variety of ways. So it's not productive. I strongly support staying here. You know, quite honestly, if I was in leadership, I would consider some serious things like not having an August work period in districts where and keeping people here to get this budget process completed in an orderly way. I contemplated having a resolution of that nature with the freshmen, my fellow colleagues in the freshman class. We chose not to because we thought that, you know, things were moving along pretty well, and we just, you know, didn't think that that would ultimately prove to be that productive. But those are tools that we need to use, and I would support a measure like that where we require everyone to stick around and get the work done.
RFK Jr. has been in the news a lot lately. He was on Capitol Hill earlier today in front of a Senate committee. Senator Hoeven, your colleague from, and our fellow North Dakotan here from our state, said at the beginning when RFK Jr. got in there, there were some comments that he made and some philosophies he had that didn't necessarily jive with the best interests of North Dakota agriculture, but he says he's kind of coming around a little bit here lately. Do you see that as well, or what's your perspective on how farmer-friendly we might see our RFK Jr. be in the days ahead?
Well, I think that's reflective of the approach that President Trump is taking with his cabinet, where it's very collaborative, and the cabinet members work together. When Ag Secretary Rollins was in North Dakota, she saw what we do. She saw our approach. We talked a lot to her about this and the concerns with RFKJ. And the approach with her that I strongly support is, listen, our farmers are the solution. We grow great products. We grow healthy products. We can, you know, if there's things that farmers can change to make things even better, our farmers are all for that, but it has to be done in terms of the reality that we exist in today and keeping in mind the need for, you know, strong, safe food products, and keeping our food supply stable. So I think that you see Rollins working with RFKJ and them, you know, kind of finding a path forward where each can meet their needs and we end up with a better solution.
Speaking of those North Dakota farmers, we're still seeing soybean prices under $10 a bushel, corn in the mid threes. It's a tough time right now, and nobody can really figure out when it's going to get better. What message do you have for North Dakota farmers right now at a time when the cost to put a crop in the ground is pretty high, but they're just not getting much for it when it comes out of the ground?
Absolutely. It's definitely tough. I'm well aware of it and working, you know, every angle I can out here to try to get some resolution. A couple of things that we're working on. First of all, today I had a meeting with the North Dakota Soybean Association, Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, our Ag Commissioner's Office, the Governor's Office, my team, and the Julie Callahan, who is Assistant U.S. Trade Rep for Agriculture, and Larry Calhoun is also in the U.S. Trade Rep Office. And we had a long conversation with them on Zoom talking about these very concerns, talking about the desperate need for some trade deals so that we can get some contracts for selling the soybeans that are just about ready to be harvested in North Dakota. And so we had a really an hour long conversation with Julie and our producers, and she heard him loud and clear. She knows how urgent this is, and you know is pledged that they're working as feverishly as they can to get these deals done. She also emphasized that China is the one who has weaponized farmers in this whole process, and so they're working hard to get these deals done. Also keeping in mind that there's a lot of other really significant issues that we're dealing with China, and they're really good at weaponizing agriculture against our own selves. And so they're also working some angles with Brazil, looking at some investigating some, you know, trade errors that they have committed, and trying to see if there's some things that can be done against Brazil to hold them accountable for the work that they're doing to support China and some of their efforts and their underhanded strategies and trade. So that's on the trade side. At the same time, we are starting having conversations. I had multiple conversations this week with other ag state reps and my colleagues in the Senate about what sorts of support might be needed on a stopgap or temporary basis, or to fill in gaps for farmers if some trade deals don't come through, so that they, you know, have the funds they need to get a crop in next year and pay their bills, et cetera. So we're working both angles here. I know farmers don't want that. They don't want the handout. They don't want that sort of safety net program. I've heard it loud and clear from them over and over again. And we want markets for them first and foremost. That's our message to the administration and these trade officials. But the reality is we have to be prepared for, you know, an extended negotiation process here, and want our farmers to know that we're looking at other means to help them out too.
Last thing before I let you go, there's been a lot of talk about D.C. crime now, with the president mobilizing the National Guard and bringing additional enforcement, I guess, to the streets, or deterrence maybe, to look at it that way. I'm curious what you have seen and what you have noticed. Does it feel different there, or is that just kind of a lot of showmanship going on by the administration, or does it really seem to be making a difference?
Well, it definitely is making a difference. You know, the crime numbers are down. There hasn't been a murder since the National Guard has been brought on board to help with the, you know, help create a more safe presence in the city. So I think that it's been definitely effective. You don't see a huge military presence. I don't. I quite honestly, I haven't even seen any of the troops myself personally, and I live in the Navy Yard, which is one of the areas that are targeted for additional coverage and law enforcement. But they're, you know, clustered in areas like the metro stops and stuff like that. The mayor has welcomed this. The police union has welcomed this, and it's just time to get it under control. Lots of people from all over the world come to Washington, D.C. You've got Congress, all of Congress that comes here and serves, as well as all the staff. And then you have millions of D.C. citizens who live and work here as well. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be safe. Yeah. There just hasn't been enough accountability for the criminals. And that's what needs to change.
Yeah,
and it
well,
is changing.
You can't, like you say, you can't argue with the statistics and the numbers. And no murders, it's almost unthinkable how big of a change that is. So lots of good stuff. Julie, thanks for the time. Always great to visit with you today.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Take care. Julie Fedorchak, North Dakota's Congresswoman, checking in from D.C. More of the Steve Hallstrom Show right after this. Americans love their big cars, at least some of them. That's next in the Top 5 at 5. Hour number two, the Steve Hallstrom Show, brought to you in part by Row & Joe Junk Haul and Removal. When it's got to go, call Row & Joe. And if there's anything the last couple of days have reminded us of regarding this weather, it is that summer is probably for most purposes behind us, and fall is here, and you know what comes next. Well, the snow's going to be flying before too long. Might even be this week, the way it's going, for gosh sakes. But it is going to be a winter here before too long, and you will have lost out on your opportunity to get rid of that pile of junk when it was easy and convenient to do it. Well, the good news for you is you have not completely missed out on that opportunity, because my friend John Minton at Roe & Joe Junk Haul and Removal is standing by ready to help you, whether it's residential or commercial clear out, hoarding, light demolition. If you've got just a pile of stuff out in that farm shed, they can get that taken care of as well. Get rid of that junk. You've been thinking about it. You've been talking about it. It's finally time to get it done. Go to RoenJoeJunk.com. That's R-O-E-N-J-O. junk.com. Don't let those toll-free phone number people get your attention. They're not from here. They don't know how to do a job the way we do it, the way John does it here in our part of the world. Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal. When it's got to go, call Roe and Joe. Coming up in this hour of the program, a lot of ground to cover here. Ron DeSantis is doubling down on getting rid of property taxes in Florida. He's not giving up on this. And he says, where there's a will, there's a way. This does my heart very good after the whole Measure 4 thing went down. So we'll talk about that coming up here in a few minutes. We're going to also get a little bit of a reality check today, in a good way, from Marion Tupi. He's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, and he has a book out, and he's going to be doing some speaking. He's coming to North Dakota's Challey Institute in September, speaking on population growth, innovation, and human flourishing. Now, I have to admit, when I saw this at first glance, I was like, sounds a little squishy to me about this whole population management thing. But he's actually on the other side. And what he does is challenge the belief that population growth is draining the world's resources. You've got all the Bill Gates people, right, that kind of want to get rid of population. This guy's got a different perspective on it. So we'll hear that from him coming up in a little bit. And the NFL season kicks off tonight. The most valuable team is playing tonight. I'm going to tell you how much money the Dallas Cowboys make in a year. And you'll know why people pay billions of dollars for these teams. So lots to do here, but your comments, conversations, welcome to 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. ValleyChristian.co is their a website address, and you can go there and make an appointment for some occupational therapy, physical therapy, mental health therapy, nurse practitioner. They've got it all over there at Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness. So with that, let's get going here with the top five at five. And these are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. There's a lot of news out there, but not all of it really hits the same way. And I've got five stories here for you that I think are very interesting. And stories about how we live and work and raise our kids and all that good stuff. So story number one, thehill.com reports that unemployed workers outnumber available jobs now in our country. And that has not been true since the COVID crash back in 2020 and 2021. Open jobs in the monthly survey fell to 7.2 million, down from 7.4 million, according to Labor Department numbers. There are currently 7.24 million job seekers and 7.18 million open positions. So this is the first time since 2021 that unemployed Americans have outnumbered available jobs. No longer is it one of those situations where, gosh, you know, there's 10 jobs out there for everybody who's looking. Well, not anymore. Thought that was interesting. Story number two, this comes from NPR, Minnesota Public Radio, which, look, I get it, right? NPR. But they do some good reporting. You just have to sort through some of the stories to kind of get the facts out of it. So I do it so you don't have to. How does that sound? So the story goes like this, that more in-home child care providers are shutting their doors in Minnesota, and daycare centers are closing too. And this is leaving a lot of parents scrambling to find a place for their kiddo to go while they have to go to work or go to school. The Department of Human Services in Minnesota says more than 4,000 licensed in-home child care providers have called it quits over the last 10 years. And that's kind of creating a dearth of affordable child care options there. Why is this happening? Well, the cost of doing it, right? This is, we don't talk enough about this. We talk a lot about inflation. Well, inflation's 3.2% or 2.4% or whatever. And we say, well, inflation's getting better. It's not. Okay, that might be. It might be that the pace of the increase of the price is coming down. But it doesn't mean that you're paying less than you were last year for what you got. And we've had 5 years of Biden inflation, 4 years and now 6 months where things have kind of been leveling steady. But basically, if you buy anything, you're paying 25% more for it than you were paying for it 5 years ago. And that's the problem. The budgeting is, and the cost of doing all these things is the biggest issue right there. Love is not enough to pay the bills. A lot of people are in it for the right reasons, but these child care providers are struggling to stay afloat there. And they're talking about overhead costs, maintenance work to make sure that the child care spaces are up to code, liability insurance, utilities, and other expenses. Everything is just getting a little bit more expensive. And then you've got food products, whether you're serving, you know, light meals or something more robust, you know, they're saying it's could be $1,000, $2,000 every month just for food to give to the kids there. But the NPR story, I'm kind of surprised they actually put this in there. They interviewed one child care provider who's getting out, and she said what finally drove her to quit wasn't any of those other things I just mentioned. She said it was the excessive regulations to maintain her child care license. She says the state's rule changes often make her take on more paperwork to document every single trip she takes with the kids to the park, the library, or the grocery store. She said, I have regulations I have to follow, numbers I have to stay within, paperwork I would have to have on the children. There's just so much. Isn't that something? It wasn't the cost. It wasn't all of the maintenance and all of that. It was the paperwork and the regulations. And isn't that a storyline that we've heard so much out of the Trump administration? It seems more and more we hear from Republicans and conservatives that we need to decrease the amount of regulations. And Democrats seem to like a lot of those things, or they balk at every attempt to remove them. Now, I will be the first one to tell you that when it comes to child care, yes, there does need to be regulations, right? I mean, let's be honest about this, but you know, paperwork for every little thing that you do, where she's talking about if I want to take my kids to the park, I've got to do paperwork on it. Come on now. That's just a little bit too crazy in my mind. So I thought that was an interesting story, but I also thought the reason that she called it quits was probably more interesting than just about anything else. Story number three, Fox Business reports that mortgage rates in the U.S. have tumbled. Don't you love those words together? Mortgage rates tumbling to their lowest level since October of 2024. So in just about a year. The lowest level since October of 24, according to Freddie Mac. They said that earlier today. According to their mortgage market survey, the average rate on the 30-year fix fell to 6.50% from last week's 6.56. Back in October of 2024, that rate got as low as 6.44, and the average rate on a 30-year loan was 6.35 a year ago. So we're going in the right direction. It's just been pretty darn slow. CNBC has story number four for us, and I'm kind of doing a two-for-one here for a bigger point. So labor market growth, according to ADP, slowed dramatically in August. The United States added just 54,000 jobs. So we've got fewer jobs being created. There was 106,000 in July, so that looked okay, but 54,000 is no good. The other note that came out today was the jobless claims went up last week from the week before. Went up 8,000 from the prior week to a total of 237,000. Now, these are big jumps. These are big numbers in jobless claims. So you put these two numbers together that came out today, and what does it tell you? Well, it tells you that the labor market is struggling. And it's like we just talked about. There's there's a job for every person now, and it's been out of balance for a long time. So all of this together should be good for interest rates. And that's, I believe, why the stock market was up today. because the Federal Reserve Board, now they're saying, well, if the labor market continues to be a problem, if jobs are difficult to find and people aren't making money and there's more people laid off and looking for work and all that, then we might have to lower rates so things become more affordable so we make it easier for everybody. Well, that's kind of how they're leaning now. So all of these economic data points about the labor market are going to lead the Fed to say, you know, we really do need to cut. And that's pretty much been baked into the cake. But now there's some conjecture out there that it could not just be a quarter point, but a half point. That means your car loans, student loans, credit cards, any kind of installment loan you take out, business loans, all of those typically are going to move at the rate cut. So these are some good things that are happening here on the rate cut side of things. But it's coming because, as a country, we're going through a little bit of a shakedown period, no question about that. And finally for you, story number five, we like our big cars. Yes, we do. We like our big cars. How about you? Well, Ford says that they are seeing a bright spot with their big gas-powered SUV, the Expedition. It's a three-row passenger vehicle. They started around $74,000. There's been some more demand for electric vehicles, of course, over the years, but this is showing that people still want those big numbers. And specifically, they were up 54% from last August, the number of vehicles, these big Expeditions, 50% growth in sales year over year. Like a car company can make money on that, no doubt about that. And for the year, they've sold 61,000 of these big boys, and that's a 13.1% increase from year-to-date 2024. Isn't that interesting? The Expedition only makes up about 5% of company sales, but they do have good margins on some of these bigger vehicles as well. So it's a gas-powered combustion engine. People still want some of the old-school stuff. Very interesting there. So I thought that was notable. People aren't just going for the little sedans. I guess that's what you get when gas prices are low. And we haven't seen a lot of change here locally, but there are certain pockets around the country where they're seeing much lower gas prices than they were a year ago. And that's because all the things we talked about with Julie Fedorchik last hour. We are freeing up energy production and distribution in the country, and that means good things when you're talking about selling gas-powered vehicles. And those, friends, are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call them the top five at five. All right, it's 5:19. Let's sneak in Chris real quick before we hit the commercial break here, because we've got a lot yet to do before we get to the bottom of the hour, but we always want to talk to the folks. So thankful to have Crystal on the line. Crystal, what's on your mind?
Well, thanks. And about energy production, Doug Burgum was just interviewed the other day. He was on the New York Post talking about 68 executive orders by the Biden administration that crippled oil and gas production, and specifically around Alaska with the Northern Bering area. And see, to me, when he was being gone through the current confirmation hearing, Secretary Burgum was speaking with Alaska Lisa Murkowski, and Lisa was specifically asking, what can we do to help Alaska? So thank goodness for Doug Burgum. And he's going to be helping revenue, you know, bringing more revenue, because that's all federal land and federal assets. And that's what he was talking about, is using the assets of the U.S. for financial gains. And I think it's a win-win.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that Lisa Murkowski is on the same page with Doug Burgum on energy development. I never quite know with her sometimes, so that's good to hear.
You got to work with who you got.
Yep, that's exactly right.
That's the name of the game.
And that's what he's doing.
You got to work with everybody.
Yes, ma'am.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you, Crystal. Thanks for calling. Good point on that one. And, good to hear that conversation taking place. All right, that is the top five at five. Thank you, Crystal, for your comments there. Well, what we couldn't get done in North Dakota, but Ron DeSantis is determined to get rid of in Florida, might get you interested. We're talking about property taxes. So what's his plan to get this done, right? It sounds really good, but you're going to have to get that money from somewhere. We're going to dig into that when we come back on the Steve Alstrom Show. Well, I was one of those crazy people that wanted to give Measure 4 a shot last year, but I was in the minority and it went down, and people said, you're foolish and silly and childish and immature. We can't do it. There's no way. Even though there were lawmakers who were saying we could do it. Look, I just thought there are people within a legislature who believe it can be done, and I'm willing to let them give it a shot. And in my mind, I thought, if it doesn't work, and we end up having to cut too many things, we can always change things later. It's not going to have to be set in stone for forever. I have gotten very uncomfortable with increasing taxes, as have many of you, and I want someone else to be uncomfortable right along with me. And I thought, let's give it a shot. Let's see how it goes. I thought it was something that we should have taken a look at, but it didn't go. Ron DeSantis is with me on this one. The governor of the great state of Florida, the freest state in the country, is doubling down on eliminating property taxes. And he has said for a long time, if you own your home, to truly own it, you have to own it free and clear of the government, and you shouldn't have to pay rent to the government. He says, I'd like to do a constitutional amendment that would apply to owner-occupied homes and not that would apply to commercial or investment properties. But he didn't allow or he didn't outline any kind of formal proposal for that. He said, we can't order the legislature to cut mill rates because we don't have the constitutional authority to do that. That has to come from counties and cities. So he said, what we're going to do is, quote, we're going to place a question on the ballot that's going to allow Floridians to be able to vote themselves relief from property tax. Now, in North Dakota, we had a plan on how it was going to happen. The state would make it up. And he didn't give any of those details. Now, remember, we still have to fund all the things that we do, you know, police and fire and schools and all that. That has to come from somewhere. So someone has to pay it. You can't just make it go away. And he's not been specific about how to exactly fund all of those things. A constitutional amendment to eliminate property taxes would require approval from 60% of Florida voters. He says, quote, some people are saying I'm skeptical about how you can do this, but I always say back to them, why can't it be done? He said, we've got examples of local governments that are spending like crazy. He said, Broward County, Florida, has had no net population growth over the last 5 years, but its budget has increased by 60%. Right? Isn't that what we're talking about here, too? Even the state government of North Dakota, which is generally thought to be run by adults, at least, we've had way bigger outpace of population growth with the spending. DeSantis said a property tax is one on an unrealized gain, arguing that he believes it's unfair to pay an annual tax on the value of a home that the owner has already paid for but is not selling. So I am going to be popping some popcorn and watching this one unfold. I am very curious to see how they do it. Somebody's going to figure out how to do it. Some good conservative state is going to say there's a way for us to do this. I don't know. I mean, it's going to have to come from somewhere. We get it. It's going to have to be coupled with cost savings, which is one thing I liked about how North Dakota ended up doing theirs with the 3% cap. Could it be more sales taxes? I guess a different kind of sales tax, but maybe then at least it's not paid specifically by that homeowner. I don't know. I am here for it all, and I want to see what they do in Florida. They say, and like DeSantis said on this one, they say, why not? A lot. Why can't we do this? Let's figure out a way. Yes, it's going to make some of us uncomfortable, but that shouldn't be the reason we say no. And I love it. I love every minute of it. All right. When we come back here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, some folks want to eliminate a good slice of the world's population because they think that will make the world more sustainable. But would that really accomplish anything? Our next guest is going to get into that, and he's got a challenge to the common belief that population growth drains the world's resources. We'll do that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. There's a great local business that you need to know about when you need small engine repair. And hey, look, we're starting to wind down the lawn mowing just a little bit, and it won't be long until we'll need those snow blowers going, and the snow removal, the little tractors we use for all that stuff. Well, if you've got to get yours in shape, there's one place to go. That's Snowbusters LLC. SnowbustersFM.com is their website. Small engine repair, they do that. They do snow removal as well. If you need that for the upcoming season, lawn care, they do it all at Snowbusters LLC. They're good in the summertime with the lawns and the yards and all that, but they spring to life when others kind of hunker down in the winter. So if you need any of those services done, and remember, they've got a great selection of lawnmowers there as well that you can check out. So some great zero-turn commercial-grade mowers, 48-inch decks, that's how you do it. SnowbustersFM.com, SnowbustersFM.com. We are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Marion Tupi, who is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. And if you're like me, you see the words Cato Institute, you're like, okay, tell me again what they do. Well, their mission is to keep principles, ideas, and a moral case for liberty alive for future generations while moving public policy in the direction of individual liberty. And we're all about that here on the Steve Holcomb Show. Limited government, free markets. They talk a lot about peace and prosperity in the work that they do. So that sounds like something that we could all use a little bit more of. And we're pleased to have Marion on the line with us today. Mr. Tupi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. I appreciate you making some time for us here today. I was intrigued by the research that you've done about how to balance this conversation about population growth, innovation, and human flourishing. And one of the things I saw in some of your writings is that you are somebody who likes to challenge the belief that you hear in some places that if we have more population or population growth, it's going to be bad for the world and its resources. So I'll just let you talk for a little bit about the research you've done and what you have found.
Well, it is actually astonishing that there are still people out there who believe that the planet needs fewer people because actually the world's population is going to peak in about 40 years and then it's going to start declining. Even in the United States, the native-born Americans have fewer than two children per couple. And two children is basically what you need in order to keep population stable. Our population in the United States continues to increase because of immigration, but the Native Americans, American-born people, have fewer than two children. Why is that important? It's because innovation comes out of the human mind. The more people you have, the more innovations you're going to have. And when you have more innovations, you can then increase your prosperity in many different ways. We are not just talking about GDP per capita. We are also talking about things like innovation in biotech or innovation in agriculture or other types of technologies. You have people who have new ideas. They are tinkerers. They come up with different ways of doing things, hopefully better ways of doing things. And that's how the country moves forward. It moves forward on the basis of innovation. And the fewer people you have, the fewer innovators you have. So that's the basic idea. And we know that having more people on the planet or in the United States is not a bad thing, because when you think about America in 1800 or 1900, it was a much poorer place than it is now, and it was also a much less populated place than it is now.
Hmm. What have been the population trends since the turn of the century, Marion? What do we know about how that population has grown?
Well, as I said, the world's population continues to grow, but that's primarily because of growth of population in sub-Saharan Africa. Sub-Saharan Africa today is the only large part of the world where people have still many more than two children per couple. In other places in the world, population, or rather what we call TFR, or total fertility rate, is lower than two. In Europe, it is like 1.4, 1.3. In the United States, as I said, without immigration, is 1.7. So at some point, if you stop having babies and if you switch off immigration, then your population is going to start decreasing, which means fewer innovators and, very importantly, fewer people who are going to be taking care of the future generations.
Yeah.
If you think about our $37 trillion debt, that's the explicit debt of the federal government, somebody has to pay it. If you have a smaller population, taxes will go up. If you are concerned about Social Security, the $37 trillion, that's an explicit debt that we owe to ourselves and foreigners. But on top of that, you have to add Social Security and Medicare. So that's another $100 trillion. So overall, we are talking about $100, $130, maybe $150 trillion, which our politicians have promised to the electorate, and we don't have people, or rather we might not have people, to cover all those expenditures in the future.
Yeah. Charlie Kirk is one that has a program on our station, Marion, and he talks a lot about that he encourages people, hey, you know, we need to get back to having big families to be able to preserve the traditions that we have here. It's not so much that you're anti-immigrant or anti-people from other parts of the world, but if we want to protect the traditions and the legacy of what it means to truly be American and be a patriot, we need to make sure that we're expanding our families, and that means we need to have more children here, no question about that. When we talk about the United States challenge, it's not unique to just us. I hear this quite a bit about China as well, and that they're facing significant concern as well. What do we know about what's happening in China with their population trends?
So let me make one comment on immigration. I'm not going to take a position on immigration because I'm an immigrant. I'm an immigrant from Eastern Europe, what used to be communist Czechoslovakia, and I think that the American people have full right of deciding who comes in, who stays, who goes, etc. But we have only two options. Either Americans are going to have native-born Americans are going to start having more babies, or we have to import more people. Otherwise, we are heading for very troubled waters economically, fiscally, and so forth. Now, what's happening in China? China made a fantastical mistake in the 1970s and the 1980s, specifically, and into the 1990s. They had a one-child policy. Hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of babies got aborted, or millions of people were prevented from being born in China because people were forcibly sterilized. And as such, the Chinese population has reached its peak about 2 or 3 years ago, and it is now declining. If trends right now, I think it is 1.3 babies per Chinese couple. So that means that that the Chinese population is actually going to shrink quite dramatically by the end of this century. India has overtaken China as the largest population in the world.
Interesting. So at the Cato Institute, I know that you folks generally have libertarian tendencies, but based on the work that you do, Marion, do you like what the White House has done by incentivizing like child tax credits? So there's a financial benefit now to having more children because you do get a benefit from that. So how do you balance those two with where you work and then kind of looking at the trend to say, okay, this might be actually a way to generate some population growth?
First of all, given that we are running 8% budget deficits per year and our debt is already $37 trillion, I think we have to be extremely, extremely careful about how much money we are spending. Every single time a politician goes up in Congress and tells to the good people of the United States, I'm going to give you X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to subsidize X, Y, and Z, please remember, we don't have this money. We are borrowing this money from future generations. So, plus, subsidies for childbirths are incredibly expensive. The Hungarians are trying to do that. I think that currently they are spending something like 5% of GDP on families. And as far as I know, the only practical result of the Hungarian policy was to increase the number of marriages, but not the number of children.
Oh, interesting.
I think that a much better way of handling this situation is to look at the ways in which our government is making it more difficult for people to start new families. Let me give you one example. At the federal, state, and local level, we are preventing building of new apartments, of new homes. If we make it easier to build more homes, then American young can start families earlier. Secondly, we are heavily subsidizing university education. People are spending far too much time in college and university learning things which are completely useless. They are never going to use it in real life. But that also means that those people are starting their families later, because they always have this view, okay, I'm going to start a family after I finish college or after I finish my doctorate or postgraduate studies, etc. What that leads to is that the later in life you start having babies, the fewer children are going to have. So there are, and why are we spending so much time in college and universities? Because the government subsidizes it, right? So through college loans. So there are many different ways in which the government is actually shooting itself in the foot by making it more difficult for young couples to start independent living and start having children. I think we should start there rather than subsidizing.
Mm. Yeah, you know, and you touched on what has turned into a really, really fierce and interesting debate about some of the tax breaks, and we talk about child tax credit, and you mentioned the fact that, you know, it is an expense when we do that to the federal government. You're right about that. And of course, the other side of that then is you will stimulate growth in the economy by doing these things, and you will end up with a greater sum at the end of the equation by doing that. So that's something we can allow the economists to debate, I guess, as time goes on. But that is a very interesting debate that feeds into exactly what you were talking about right there. I want to ask you about your you've got a couple
may
of
I,
concepts.
May I respond?
Please do.
May I respond to what you just said?
Please.
So I'm not entirely sure that we can be certain that the more money we spend, the more we stimulate the economy. This is the Keynesian approach to economic growth. Basically, government borrows, it spends a lot of money, it stimulates economy that way. It would possibly make sense if you could ensure that every dollar that we borrow is spent in such a way that it generates at least $1.01 in return, meaning that you are getting more for the dollar than what you are putting in. But that's not as easy as people make it sound. For example, in the private sector, you would expect that when people put their own private money on the line, they are doing it in expectation that they are going to generate more money than they put in, right? You are pursuing profit. But that's not necessarily true for the government. The government will allocate the money depending on political preferences of Congress. It will depend. It will spend money based on lobbying. It will spend money based on whatever a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. decides that is a good investment. And that is not a guarantee of success at all.
Oh, that's fair. It's a fair point to make. I would just say in response to that, that there are people, Brian Westbury, Steve Forbes, there, Larry Kudlow, Charles Payne. There are a number of people that say we have the numbers on this, and when you cut taxes, which is the same thing, just packaged a little bit differently than tax credits, that when you cut taxes, you end up stimulating enough growth that you do have a bigger product at the end than what you spent originally. So
it's just a good
debate for economists.
I think that in that case, we are talking about two slightly different things. If you cut taxes, that indeed can stimulate growth, because you are putting money in the pockets of ordinary American people, and they are pursuing their own self-interest, and they are presumably investing at least some of that money wisely. What I was talking about is government borrowing money and then trying to stimulate the economy through government spending, which I don't think works.
Oh, I'm completely with you. Yes, I'm sorry, sir. I thought you were talking about the child tax credit that we were discussing, and you seem to have some doubts there. Makes sense, and I completely agree with you. I don't know that there's anybody that I follow on the economic side that would disagree with what you just said there. So thank you for clarifying that. I do, before I let you go, I want to have you talk about one of your concepts that you talk about in your writings, and the term is superabundance, and it's basically your definition is where resources grow more abundant as the population expands. So tell us what superabundance is and what it looks like when it's actually working in action.
Super. Superabundance is the name of a book that I have written with a colleague of mine, 3 years ago. It's called Superabundance, the Story of Population Growth, Innovation, and Human Flourishing on an Infinitely Bountiful Planet. If anybody out there wishes to buy it, it's still available. But the point that we are making is that as far as we can tell, and we are looking at data going back almost 200 years, resources have been becoming cheaper relative to income, meaning whether you're looking at a bag of oranges or you're looking at a ton of zinc or coal or gas or oil, everything is becoming cheaper relative to income. And that is not surprising, at least to us, because, as I said, when population grows, you have more people who are able to innovate things, who are able to come up with new ideas. Let me give you one example. In the old days, we used to primarily drill for oil in the United States and for gas, making holes in the ground and putting in drills, and then we would get that oil. Now, at some point, we got most of that oil, and those wells became uneconomical. But then we had smart people, the innovators, who figured out that through fracking, you could actually get to oil and gas in those wells, which were uneconomical. In other words, you could get more gas and more oil from those same wells. The reason why the United States is today the greatest exporter of oil and gas is precisely because we are able to tap into resources that we previously couldn't get to through normal drilling methods. Then we came up with fracturing, and now we can get to oil and gas that we previously couldn't. And that's an example of new innovators. And the point of the book is that the more people you have, the more likely it is that you are going to come up with geniuses who are going to come up with new innovations, which can turn empty wells into productive wells.
Yep.
And that's basically the point of the book, and that's what we say superabundance is. Superabundance is when our resources are increasing at a faster pace than population, because everybody brings to the table more than they take off.
Yes, it's a great term, and you're 100% right. It's a numbers game, as you so eloquently state. If you want to hear more from Marion, he's going to be appearing at the Chaley Institute for Global Innovation and Growth September lecture series they're doing, and they're talking about human progress and flourishing. You can find out how to connect on that event at ndsu.edu/Chaley Institute. Marion, this has been a wonderful conversation. I appreciate you taking the time. Very interesting and certainly timely. Appreciate you being with us today.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mr. Tupi. You take care. 5:53, Steve Hallstrom Show, back after this. Tonight's show, friends. Have a great night and keep on flying that flag.